We Christians have a difficult assignment. We are obligated to see, to really, really see, deeply see two realities that collide with one another. And these realities are, in the first place, that the world is a very dangerous place for us to live, and that all of our lives, we are going to have to brace ourselves for truly terrifying experiences that are going to be part of our existence on planet Earth. So we have to see this, you know, like with eyes wide open, not to be naive or foolish innocence. We have to see that this is a really scary place, and you have to brace for terrifying experiences as long as you live here. But the other thing we have to see is that God is good, and in order to be emotionally well, like to be wise, you have to have your eyes wide open and see how dangerous everything is to be wise. But you have to be emotionally well, you have to really see, like deeply see, that the Lord is good and that He is always sending us Hallmark moments so that we know He loves us and so that we know that everything is really going to be well. And we have to focus, like to really see, like in focus, we have to see that everything is really going to be okay in the plan of God for the lives of His followers. And you have to see that, and you have to see it all the time. These things have to occupy your focus more than anything else. You have to see it. I was looking through our current church directory, and if my count is right, we have 107 entries. And I was counting as I went through those, all the people who are going through really, really hard things right now. Or at least they have the residue of having gone through really hard things, difficult things, big problems, serious problems. And I found that there were only 24 people in that list who were not going through real hardship right now, who have not had really hard things to deal with in their lives. And of those 24, I realized that actually there are four in that directory. They're kind of new friends to me, and I don't really know them well enough to know that they're not having problems. So maybe there aren't 24 that don't have significant serious problems out of 107. Maybe they're having problems and I just don't know them well enough to know what those problems might be. And besides that, out of the 24 who don't seem to be having really hardship, some sort of big hardship in their lives right now, there are about 10 young adults in that church directory. And as far as I know, you know, they're not having serious problems. Maybe they are and I don't know. But you think of big problems like health problems. Well, most young adults don't have serious health problems. That tends to come later in life. If you're thinking about financial problems, well, most 25-year-olds don't have big financial problems because they're too young to have a lot of big financial problems. You know, what do they know about financial problems? Although it is possible. And then some of these, as far as I know, came from really nice families, and so they don't really have family problems, and some of them aren't married, so they don't have marriage problems, and they don't have children, so they don't have parenting problems. So they're just so young, you know, why would they have any big problems, as far as I know? But when I look at that list, you have to realize that we have some big problems. Here are some of the things I found looking at our own church family. Big problems, serious things that people have gone through. So for example, I know of some people who are being haunted by something really awful from the past. You know, maybe okay now, but something from their past has been really rough. We have individuals who suffer from catastrophic bereavement and loss of loved ones. I mean, it was earth-shaking that they lost these particular loved ones. We have people that we love right here in the Avalon family who have had near-death events that have shaken themselves or their loved ones. Big things like I almost died or somebody that I love almost died. It was terrible. We have people in our church family who are dealing with the threat of Alzheimer's disease on themselves or loved ones. I mean, it's a really heavy thing to have to walk through. If you have loved ones who are going through this or have recently gone through this, inexplicable emotional anguish or instability endured by self or loved ones. They'll say, you just don't understand. I have to be on medication. I'm not well, or my loved one is not well. Addiction effects on self or loved ones. We have people here with a history of addiction, or loved ones with a history of addiction that has impacted them. It has shaken their world. We have people in the Avalon family who have financial problems such that they are unable to pay their bills, even at this very moment. They cannot pay their bills without even either begging somebody to help them, going to someone for help, or perhaps overworking themselves because they simply aren't making ends meet. At this very moment, that's happening in our church family. We have individuals who know what it's like to be abandoned by spouse or parent or child, and that shakes a person. It is suffering. Or to be abandoned or betrayed by a social group. That is, maybe at school I'm an outcast, or in my family, or on this side of my family, the in-law side, or whatever, my parents, whatever, I've been an outcast with a certain group that was important to me. There are people who have children who are wayward and spiritually cold, and it crushes their hearts. They hate it. They're going through serious difficulties because of that. There are people who are facing long-term loneliness in life. Like, I just don't have people around me who care about me. And that's in our church family right at this moment. There are people who have long-term physical pain. You know, as long as I breathe in this world, my knees are going to hurt me. My back is going to hurt me. I have stomach problems. I can't sleep well. And that's going to happen as long as I live. Chronic pain, long-term pain, cancer threats that were faced by either themselves or someone that they love, debilitating disease endured by themselves or loved ones. You know, I have a problem and it's never going to go away. It's just who I am for the rest of my life. Big problems. Some people are dealing with infertility. They're so disappointed that they can't have children, or their children can't have children, and it breaks their hearts. There are custody battles for children, and it's excruciating. I can't even be with my own loved ones. I can't. There are children with disabilities. You just don't know what it's like. You know, my child has it hard. He's bullied. There are certain things he can't play, he can't do. Disabilities. There are things that our church people have voluntarily deprived themselves of for the sake of Jesus. Big problems. When you think about this, you realize that so much of the Bible was really written to address this very kind of thing. And today we're looking at the life of John the Apostle, and we're talking about Crucifixion Day. Now, obviously, Crucifixion Day is so much Jesus' story. And of course, it has to be first and foremost all the time Jesus' story. But this is a series on the life and teachings of the Apostle John. And so he also has a story, a mini story, a small part to play in a great drama. But to him, it's a big part. And I want to look at what John was going through on Crucifixion Day. And we're going to find that he is going through real, real hardship. It is hard to be the Apostle John on Crucifixion Day. Remember, this is the night before Jesus dies. And Simon Peter is following Jesus. And so also did another disciple. This is the way John talks about himself, so he's not bragging. You know, and so did I follow Jesus while the others stayed behind. He wouldn't say that. He didn't say that. He said, Peter followed, and so did another disciple. And this disciple knew the high priest. You think, well, I wonder why the Apostle John, a fisherman from Galilee, would know the high priest. But remember that though John was from Galilee, his family was apparently wealthy, and remember, they had servants, and so he was a person of some significance. He was a follower of John the Baptist, and so he knew the high priest. When Jesus is arrested, he goes into the home of the high priest, and the home has a courtyard and a gate. John is allowed to go in because they know him. The high priest knows him. And it says in verse 16, Peter did not go in because Peter does not know the family of the high priest. And so John went in and he knows Peter is waiting outside. He talks to the young lady who keeps the gate to the yard and she lets him in. So this is what John is doing while Jesus is being betrayed, tried, arrested, harassed, bullied. All right, John 19 picks up the story on the very day of the crucifixion, and Jesus is now on the cross. And then once again, John gives us this little glimpse of what it was like to be with Jesus on the cross. So there stood by the cross of Jesus his mother, Jesus' mother Mary. And when Jesus therefore saw his mother and the disciple standing by whom he loved, he says to his mother, "Woman, behold your son." And to the disciple, "John, behold your mother." And John took her into his own home from that day forward as part of his family. All right, so we're looking here at crucifixion day with Jesus and two little glimpses of John being here, two little vignettes being here on crucifixion day and the suffering that he was enduring and what the Lord was doing about this. In the first place, we want to talk about John following from a safe distance when Jesus was being led away at his arrest. And then we want to say something about the small encouragements that came to him on the very worst day of his life. All right, so here we are, ruined by the fall. John 18:15 again talks about this vignette of John and Peter following Jesus from a distance when Jesus was being led away to his kangaroo court trial by the high priest. And it says that they followed. Matthew 26:58 is nice. It says that Peter followed him afar off, so following from a safe distance. In one respect, you can hate John if you want to, because he followed and Peter from a distance. On the other hand, you can appreciate that he followed at all. That's some loyalty. This is what we might call the death of a dream. You have to put yourself in John's situation and all the disciples, but you have to put yourself in this situation. It wasn't just that they were about to lose their loved one, Jesus, which was, you know, catastrophic in the extreme. But they understood him to be the Messiah. They had seen him do miracles that involved nature, like quieting the storm, the waves. You don't just hold back waves unless you're something really special. They had seen him cast out demons who were tearing people psychologically and physically, tearing their lives to pieces. And Jesus could just address those evil spirits and make them go away. John had seen this. And now, having come to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, these people are hauling him away, treating him like a criminal, and it was a mob, and everybody knows that they had threatened to kill him, and it looks like that's what's just now about to happen. This is the death of a dream, not only the loss of a loved one, it's the death of a religion. I mean, what if you were to find out through some crazy, impossible scenario that the Christian faith is not true? What if tonight you had to go to bed knowing that you were wrong about Jesus? You were wrong about the Christian faith. There is no heaven. There is no hell. There's nothing. It's just all just a scam. See, that's not just the loss of a loved one at that point. That's the loss of a worldview. It's the loss of a reality that meant everything to you. And that's where John is right now. So he's following from a bit of a distance. And you can hate him for doing that, but maybe you can also appreciate what's happening here. He is facing the worst possible emotional trauma. It cannot be worse. This is why people commit suicide, when they feel like John must have felt at this moment. On August 15th, 1945, the people of Japan were told that they should gather around their radios because the emperor was going to speak with them, address the entire nation of Japan. The emperor had never talked to the common people before, ever. He didn't do that. And so they were all told to gather around the radio at noon because the emperor is going to talk with us. The Japanese people prided themselves in having gone 2,600 years. I mean, that's a very, very long time for a nation that's not even, you know, 300 years old yet. 2,600 years, we can't even appreciate that in the U.S., but that's a long time, without ever being successfully invaded. They were so proud of that. And it never even occurred to them that they could lose the war. They gathered around their radios. And by the way, many of the people in the villages of Japan didn't own radios. So they had to go to public places. Places where many had gathered and listened to one radio. They gathered around, and Emperor Hirohito came on the radio, and he began to explain to them that they had lost the war and that now he was surrendering. Japan had lost. And eyewitness reporters say they observed in that moment people collapsing, sometimes flat on their faces, sometimes on their backs, on their knees, collapsing at the news that they had lost the war. Hundreds of Japanese soldiers immediately committed suicide. Important military leaders committed suicide right then and there. It wasn't just the loss of the war for them, because in Shintoism, they had come to believe that the emperor was supernatural, that he had descended from the gods, almost like a virgin birth sort of a thing, that he had descended from the gods and that he was a lesser god. He was semi-divine. If you were a normal Japanese citizen, you weren't allowed even to look at the emperor if he happened to be near you. You're not allowed to look at him because he's like God. And you certainly aren't allowed to mention his name. Nobody would do that in Japan. You can't do that. He's God. He is a god, descended from the many gods. And so now you have the death of a religion. And these people were so upset that they immediately started committing suicide. I mean, this is where John is. When Germany lost this same war at approximately this same time, remember, it was not just the deaths of loved ones that had died in the war effort. It was the death of an entire concept of reality for them. It was the death of a dream. And 10%, almost 10% of all of the Nazi generals in the army committed suicide. Almost 10%. Almost 15% of all the generals in the Nazi Air Force committed suicide. Almost 15%. And more than 20% of all the Nazi admirals in the Navy committed suicide. It's the death of a dream. So you can hate John if you want to for following from a distance with Peter. But on the other hand, you can appreciate this man is in trauma. This is the worst day of his life. And so he follows at a distance. What we find then is that he has not braced himself for what Jesus had taught him. He had not foreseen this, and we don't foresee the difficulties in our lives, and it's very distressing. And Jesus had told them all of these verses are talking about how the Lord was saying, I'm going to die someday. You know, you have to be braced for this. There's going to be hardship. And you have to be braced for hardship. You know, as you follow Jesus, there are going to be some really, really bad things that happen to you. You have to brace for that. Way back in John chapter 2, Jesus said, you destroy this temple, speaking about his body, and in 3 days I'm going to raise it up. John 3:14, as Moses was lifted up by, and lifted up indicates like the cross, you know, as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so I'm going to be lifted up. They're going to put me on a cross. And all that's kind of cryptic, but Matthew 9:15, the days will come when the bridegroom shall be taken away. I'm not always going to be with you fellows. And then you're going to fast and mourn. In Matthew 12:40, as Jonah was in the belly of the whale 3 days and three nights, I'm going to be in the grave 3 days and three nights. John 6:51, the bread that I give is my flesh. I'm going to give it for the life of the world. In Matthew 17:22, Jesus said, the Son of Man shall be betrayed in the hands of men. They'll kill him, and the third day he'll be raised again. John 8:58, when you've lifted up the Son of Man, you'll know that I am he. John 10:11, I'm the good shepherd, and the good shepherd gives his life for his sheep. And the big one was in Matthew 16:21, just before the transfiguration. It says, from that day forward, Jesus started talking about how he was going to be killed and be raised again the third day. So it's not like John could not have braced himself for this. It's just that he didn't. And he's caught off guard. And it's the death of a dream. It's the death of a concept of reality. It's as awful as it can be. And sometimes you have to go through things like this if you're going to follow Jesus. Can you at least appreciate what's going on here? You know, we don't call it the fall for nothing. The fall of man, the fall of the universe. When Adam sinned, the whole thing fell. We have the song, Blessed Be the Name of the Lord. And it has a line there, once ruined by the fall. Ruined. There are times when your life is going to seem absolutely ruined. You know, that's where John is on Crucifixion Day. His life seems ruined. It's ruined by the fall. People are bad. We have nature that's trying to tear us to pieces. We have cancers that are ravaging our bodies. Once ruined by the fall, ruined. Life can be ruined by the fall. And that's what John is going through. But now I want you to see that in spite of all of this, we know that there's resurrection. Jesus did, after all, say, so the Son of Man will be in the heart of the earth 3 days and three nights. And then be raised. And Jesus kept telling them, and be raised, and be raised, and be raised. So yes, as you follow Jesus, this could be really awful for you sometimes. I know. It can be. But you have to remember that resurrection changes all of that. And John doesn't see it right now. And you don't see it. When you're going through the hardship, when you're going through the worst day of your life, you don't see it. But resurrection is going to solve this problem. Resurrection is going to cure even this. And you have to see that. And not only see it, you have to focus on it. And John isn't focusing on it. And that's why he's feeling so terrible. But you've seen the story now. And you know, in a very short time, you are going to be resurrected as well. You are going to have all of your problems solved, even the pains of your body and all those things. Resurrection cured John's depression and anxiety. And let the gospel of resurrection cure yours as well. In the meantime, say, well, what am I supposed to do until I die and am face to face with Jesus and I am resurrected? What about now? And I love this because we find these small encouragements that I'm calling today hallmark moments that are provided by God for all of us on the worst days of our lives. John 19:25, don't you love this? They're stood by the cross. Thing is, when you're standing by the cross, there's not a lot of comfort in that. Standing by the cross is never going to be a lot of fun. Well, they stood by the cross, and there is Jesus' mother, Mary, and some other women. In verse 26, when Jesus saw his mother and the disciple standing by whom he loved, he says to his mother first, woman, behold your son. And then to the disciple that he loves, behold your mother. I just think that's so interesting. Jesus is on the cross, and he is providing something very special. Put yourself now in Mary's place. If Mary had a baby at about 16 years old, perhaps 17, which we think is normal for the Jewish culture at that time, and then Jesus is about 33 years old, we have Mary just about in her late 40s or very early 50s. And she's already evidently a widow because somebody has to take care of her. So where's Joseph? Evidently he has died. I was seriously thinking about having all of the ladies in the Avalon congregation today who are in their late 40s stand. But I guess I'm not going to do that. But I mean, in your late 40s, you're just like a baby, right? I mean, and she's already a widow, and now on top of that, she's going to lose her son. Already a widow, now bereaved of her son. And in that moment, obviously, this is the worst possible case. This is just awful. Of the death of a dream, if you will. This is terrible. And Jesus is going to provide this hallmark moment. I mean, if you can just imagine how brilliant this is. Of all of the, you know, women in the whole wide world, Mary was probably about the most wonderful woman there was in that generation. I think, don't you, that that's why she would have been chosen to carry the Savior. She was wonderful. I mean, Mary must have been top. So tender-hearted, so thoughtful, she must have been tops. And you think, okay, well, what about all of the people, all of the men folk in the whole wide world? Who do you suppose was the very best one? Maybe the Apostle John. The Apostle John, whom Jesus loved in a very special way. So Jesus loves this woman, his mother, who stuck by him Oh, and remember that Jesus has other brothers, but you can't count on them because not so long ago, less than a year ago, John chapter 3, his brothers are sort of badgering him. And as you see in John 7, 5, neither did his brothers believe. You know, so there's this kinship, kindred spirits, right? Kindred spirits, people you almost have a cosmic bond to because you think the same way, you feel the same way. These are kindred spirits. And Mary cannot be a kindred spirit with her own sons who disbelieve in Jesus because that's just everything to her. And, of course, it's everything to John. And those brothers cannot connect. So Jesus says, all right, well, I have two kindred spirits that I'm going to put together. Mary, this is your kindred spirit, John. And John, this is your kindred spirit, Mary. And I want you to be family, family in Christ. And remember that when you have kindred spirits, when you have the family bond of the Christian faith, that's stronger than mere genetics. Say, well, I have a blood bond with such and such a person. Yes, but you might not even enjoy being around that person because of the way he thinks. This is more than a blood bond or a legal bond like marriage, I now pronounce you man and wife. This is more than that. This is kindred spirits. And you can imagine that many times Mary and John kind of looked at each other like, yeah, you and I, we really enjoy being together. And so the Lord just made it a thing. And that's like a hallmark moment. This is like a terrible day, worst day for John and for Mary. And yet there are these little encouragements. You know, the Lord is always doing that. So if you're going through the worst day of your life right now, the Lord is undoubtedly sending you little hallmark moments to pick you up. When Teresa was doing her radioactive iodine therapy for thyroid cancer, there was this day, it happened to be Halloween, and she wasn't allowed to be near anybody. So when you talk to her, she had to be way down the hallway, you know, because she's radioactive. She'll poison you. And so she's way down the hallway and people talking to her. Hi. It also happens that Ben and Lori Puckett brought their kids over all in costume array. And they went outside. And then also Teresa went outside. And from a distance, she could watch the kids in their costumes. It just meant so much to her. You know what? She still remembers that. Because she was going through a hard time, and there was like this hallmark moment. And it's just a little mercy, a little encouragement that God gives you. When our granddaughter, Evie, died. By the way, before I talk about that, also our friend Andrea arranged for like 2 weeks of meals because Teresa wasn't allowed in the kitchen. She's radioactive. And I am culinarily challenged, so that was going to be a problem. And so here was Andrea, and she provided like 2 weeks of meals. Every day somebody comes over for 2 weeks and says, here's what you're going to eat. And that was so nice. Those are hallmark moments, and I guess maybe we'll never forget that. When Evie was born, and of course she could only live for 4 hours because there were so many birth defects, and I remember in that time being around Micah, and Micah was still just a very little boy and he didn't understand what was going on. But I remember it was so surreal because we're in this hospital room and something really, really bad is happening. Really, really bad. But Micah has no idea. And he has little motorcycle toys and we're all playing with motorcycle toys on the floor. And he's happy because as far as he's concerned, all his favorite people in the world are in the hospital. I mean, this is a great place. And I remember thinking, it's so nice that we have life, you know, bubbling forth and all this. It's so nice. I mean, this is terrible. But there's this little hallmark boy there who's making us realize that, hey, you know, there still is a lot to be thankful for. It's not like it erases all of the trauma and drama and pain, but it's just great, you know. Well, here's a little guy, and it was a hallmark moment. When Teresa's dad, Charlie, died. Our friend Robbie came to the funeral. He became a very successful Christian singer and entertainer. And we said, well, you know, Charlie's passed away, and we know that you used to have a pretty special relationship to him when you were a very young man. And he says, I'm coming. And he came to the funeral and he sang for us. It's like, well, it doesn't erase what the funeral was doing. But it was like this hallmark moment. And no matter what you're going through right now, I would just beg you to notice that the Lord is probably sending you some little hallmark moments. And we learn from Paul in Philippians 4, think on these things. Think on the reality of resurrection. You know, the problem is really going to be solved here in about 3 days anyway. So don't worry, our light affliction, which is but for a moment, just a little while. And even then, in this light affliction, the Lord is sending you hallmark moments. And I hope you see that. I hope you feel it. And I hope you look for it. Because we're taught by the Apostle Paul in Philippians 4, think on these things. Whatever things are true and honest and just and pure and lovely, they're hallmark moments, lovely moments all around you. Think on these things. Yes, eyes wide open. You see how awful, how dangerous this world is. Are your eyes open? Are you naive? Don't be naive. Brace yourself for it. The world can be really, really awful. Brace yourself for it and be ready spiritually for when awful comes knocking on your door. Brace for it. Be wise. But to be emotionally well, you're going to have to focus on the hallmark moments. And I promise you, Jesus is sending you those right now. I'd like for you to bow your heads and close your eyes. If you've never yet trusted Jesus as your Savior, could you, in this moment of silence, give your heart to Jesus? You know, life might really be awful, but he's trying to bless you. And I hope in the silence of this moment, you'll say yes to the Lord who invites you to be his follower. And you'll see that he's going to solve all your problems, even on the worst day of your life.